This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark, brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
This is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Kevin Lin. He is director of Progressives for Immigration Reform. He was in the news lately about his advertisement campaign in the Bay Area BART stations about the H-1B visas. Kevin, great having you back on.
Robert, good to be here. Good to be here. Been a heck of a week. I'm actually in a Airbnb in San Francisco.
I guess before we talk about the ad campaign, do you want to give a brief introduction to what your organization is about? We did an interview before.
Absolutely. My organization, Progressives for Immigration Reform, we are an organization that's dedicated to really having a conversation with my progressive brothers and sisters on the unintended consequences of immigration as it's practiced today in the United States. And that's illegal immigration, that's unbridled legal immigration, worker visa programs that are being abused and displacing American workers. These are the things we focus on. Those are what we focus on the labor side, but we also look at the consequences of an ever-increasing population. And when you're a country with the world's largest carbon footprint per capita, you really should be looking at those aggregate numbers and where the demographics are headed. And for here in the United States, you have to talk about immigration at that point, because I think in California, almost 100% of population growth is fueled by immigration, and across the country, it's about 80%. So that's a conversation I am always trying to have with my progressive brothers and sisters.
Would you say the majority of your supporters are self-identified progressives, or do you get support from other groups that are more right-wing?
I get very few supporters are what I would consider are known left-wing organizations. It seems that our message is better received by right-wing groups. I think that's unfortunate, but that doesn't stop me from working to have this conversation with the folks on the left, and who might be, you know, middle of the road, and, you know, essentially, you know, they're good-natured folks who are like, well, why? We're a nation of immigrants. Why would we ever want to tell someone no? So that's my audience. Those are the folks I really want to talk to. And again, look at the economic as well as environmental consequences.
Did Bernie Sanders ever discuss the H-1B visas at some point?
I never heard it. In fact, I was in Los Angeles when Bernie had his first rally there during the primary. And Bernie, prior to the becoming the candidate, you know, Senator Sanders, the independent from Vermont, seemed to understand the supply and demand relationship as it impacts the labor markets. And, you know, I can't quote him directly at this point, but I recall, you know, comments he made where he talked about restricting immigration for those reasons. However, when he got to Los Angeles, he had Dreamers up on stage, and we never heard him address immigration other than amnesty.
So with your campaign now, This is an advertisement in the BART stations. It's in several different stations. And what it says, U.S. tech workers, your companies think you are expensive, undeserving, and expendable. Congress fixed H-1B law, so companies must seek and hire U.S. workers. So these have gone up in a number of BART stations. I think the Civic Center BART, but also a number of BART stations in Oakland.
Right. Well, Civic Center and 19th Street, we did saturation campaigns with. So it's about as subtle as a heart attack there.
Huh.
And there, and then the posters are on 200 trains in the BART system.
So it's not so there's the stations, but then the trains basically go everywhere. So people from, say, Fremont to San Jose to San Francisco to Oakland will see it.
Correct. In fact, I had the pleasure of riding on trains where I saw my poster. So I was quite pleased to see that.
Did you talk to people in the train and got their response?
Yes. It seemed that they were nervous to talk about it. Either they didn't have an opinion or they seemed very nervous to talk about it. But it's interesting. I'd met with one tech worker. And as we were parting, we went down to the Civic Center station, and he stopped and he said, I just need to take this in for a little bit longer. And then he looked at me and said, thank you, thank you. Thank God someone is saying it like this.
So your core message is that you're trying to reach out to tech workers?
Yes, absolutely. You know, you had mentioned that this campaign drew a lot of media attention, and it did, an awful lot. Friday, my phone was ringing off the hook. Saturday, and even Sunday, I was doing interviews about the program, even into Monday. However, if it were just about the media attention, I wouldn't consider it a success. What I was really hoping to do was to have tech workers reach out to me so that we could begin the process of organizing tech workers. Because you see, Rob, ultimately, if we're going to be successful in reforming the H-1B program and these other visa programs, we're going to need to have a political solution. And the only way to arrive at a solution that works for the citizens is to have a movement, and that has to be driven by the grassroots.
What has been the news coverage like? I know you were covered in the San Jose Mercury News, but also the major San Francisco papers, I think including the Chronicle.
Right. We made the Hill. Well, initially on Friday, the headline, a typical headline would have been anti-immigrant group, you know, plasters or posters all over BART. And I was interviewed, and I will say, you know, I'll give them all credit. Nothing, they did not quote me inaccurately. Now, they didn't certainly quote everything I said, but many of those comments got picked up and into secondary outlets or other outlets. And so on Friday, the tenor seemed to be very anti-ad. And certainly forces, I would call them the forces that be, were coming out of the woodwork to stigmatize the ads as being anti-immigrant. But when the San Jose Mercury News published their article, which was very fair and very accurately described the ad and its intention and purpose, that seemed to like mark a shift in the reporting, where the headlines were no longer anti-immigrant. They were like, well, BART had to take this ad, or they were, this is the ads would be something to the effect of, this was, is an anti-H-1B visa ad. This ad is going after companies that exploit the H-1B visa. So there was a definite shift. And what was really heartening to see, Rob, were the comments. It didn't matter whether it was the SF Gate, the San Francisco Chronicle, San Jose Mercury News, the different broadcast stations that picked up the story, overwhelmingly supportive of the ads.
Oh, you're saying the commentators.
Correct. The comments, right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And these are generally people who would be more progressive politically.
Well, certainly they seem to be tech workers themselves, people that have been the ones most brutalized by the program.
Was it difficult getting Bart to agree to put up the ads?
No, it wasn't. I didn't have directly work with Bart. We used an advertising agency out of Philadelphia. Now, Bart wasn't the only metro that we tried for. We were also looked to do this in the DC metro and Union Station, but we were not allowed to do that. DC metro and Union Stations, as a rule, do not do advocacy ads.
No political ads whatsoever.
Correct. Yeah, so they were, they didn't single us out not to allow us to put up our posters. However, it fed under that subject of advocacy, so they didn't allow it.
Have you had organizations like the SBLC attack you, or special interest groups attacking the ads?
In the past, and this is going back, oh boy, I bet you 8 years, 7, 8 years, I've been the executive director of Progressives for Immigration Reform for about a year and a half, but I was one of the founding board members 11 years ago, and we were attacked by the Southern Poverty Law Center, some anti-immigrant racist group, and they put this information on their website. And at the time, Leah Durant was the executive director, and she had to call them and say, do you understand, I'm an African-American woman, and when you look at our board, we have a large number of Black Americans, women, how could we be this prejudiced group you're talking about? And if you look at everyone on this board, these are far left of center folk who are scientists, academics, political activists. So they took that down, but the stigma remained.
And with the H-1B visas, you make the case that there's this major misconception that there is a shortage of qualified workers. You make the case that there are enough STEM graduates, and people with STEM degrees graduate than gain employment. So there's no massive shortage of labor. That's a major
mess. There is not. The University of California, Los Angeles, only 28% of their STEM graduates get jobs after graduating. So that tells you something. Even if a number of them were going on for higher degrees, masters, PhDs, that tells me there is not a shortage of STEM workers. And there are for instance, I did an amazing interview with Craig D'Angelo. He's out of Connecticut. He's currently running for Congress there. He's a STEM worker, an IT worker, who he and his and 219 of his colleagues were brought in one day and fired. They were given 3 months to train their H-1B visa holding replacements, and if they didn't do that, they wouldn't get their severance package. And they were also forced to sign in order to get their severance package a non-defamation and non-disclosure agreement. So what that tells me is it's not a matter of there not being STEM workers in the United States. What companies are doing, whether they are private companies like Google, whether they are quasi-public utilities, like in this case with Craig D'Angelo, Northeast Utilities, they're just looking to hire workers on the cheap.
So that's basically the thing. They'll say there's a shortage of labor, that they just want the wages to be as low as possible. I know some Congress members have sponsored a bill. I forget the name of the bill and who sponsored it, but it said that in order to hire an H-1B visa, there would have to be a certain cap at income. Are you familiar with that bill?
Yes. There are a couple of bills out there. There's actually several. There, here in the South Bay, Congressman Ro Khanna is co-sponsoring a companion bill to the Durbin-Grassley bill that is in the Senate. And Durbin-Grassley has been around for 11 years. That tells you how difficult it has been to reform this program, all the massive amount of interest that want to keep the loopholes in this program going. And essentially, Ro Khanna's bill, the Grassley-Durbin bill, they're looking to close these loopholes that are being exploited by these staffing agencies like the Infosys and the Tatas of the world. But they're not the only ones.
So the Infosys and the Tatas, those are explicitly companies that they're Indian companies, but there's plenty of U.S. companies like Google as well.
Well, Infosys and Tata, they are staffing agencies. They're not consulting firms. So what they'll do is they will apply for thousands and thousands of H-1B visas. And, of course, they're going to get a lot back as a result. So what they'll do then is they will, you know, they will staff IT positions. They'll staff IT positions, let's say, for DuPont or, you know, the hospital down the street. It's not uncommon if you look at the Progressives for the Progressives for Immigration Reform website, you will find our H-1B visa database. And what we've done, Rob, is we collect every quarter all of the what they call the LCA, the labor conditional applications. These are the applications that a company fills out and says, all right, this is the position we want to hire a foreign national for. And they'll submit that LCA. And it's amazing what we'll see then. So it then becomes a lottery as to which positions actually get an H-1B visa, an I-129 ultimately filled out for. But this kind of demonstrates, and what we'll see with this is a lot of these visas are applied for through an Infosys or a Tata, and where the person will be working will be some U.S. company because they have to give that address and information in the application. So that's one way the system is gamed. Now, again, going back, you had mentioned some of this legislation. What I like about bills like Grassley-Durbin is that, again, they're looking to close these loopholes, looking to stop these abuses by these body shops, but also making it a requirement that companies make a good faith effort to hire an American first. And right now, before you don't have to demonstrate that before a company doesn't have to demonstrate that it's tried to fill a position before it submits the LCA, the labor conditional application for that position. And a good reform would be to do just that, to have them demonstrate that they advertised for this position or they went out and recruited for this position maybe 6 months to a year before they looked for a foreign national.
Has Trump accomplished anything on the issue?
No. In fact, I've seen nothing encouraging. And it just seems that, for instance, there's the Goodlatte bill in Congress, which it, from an immigration standpoint, there's some good things in it. They're looking to cut chain migration, but they're also looking to expand the visa programs.
Is this H-1 the same as the RAISE Act?
No, it's not. In fact, I had always been a big proponent of the RAISE Act. Unfortunately, it has never gotten out of committee and really never saw light of day.
Trump did support that, but you're talking about another bill that Trump supports.
Well, it's hard to say. From what I've seen, it's hard to see what Trump is supporting. He certainly wants his wall, which I can't get that excited about, because trust me, you're finding illegal immigrants in Michigan and Boston, and that's way above the Rio Grande. So I don't think the wall is going to solve it. What we need is regulation and enforcement. You know, we need to know when someone comes in, and we need to know when they haven't checked out. And that's something we have the technology to do. And we also need programs such as E-Verify, where, you know, citizenship does have to be checked by an employer. And frankly, one thing we never see is employer, really stiff employer sanctions. My view is if we threw employers in jail, a lot of this problem would go away overnight.
And as far as that goes, Trump's Justice Department has cracked down on illegal immigrant criminals to some degree, but as far as E-Verify...
To some degree, exactly.
But he's done nothing about job enforcement.
Right. They're not doing the employer sanctions and workplace enforcement like I would see, but certainly I think they've been attempting to make an effort to crack down on those who, you know, are still in this country but have been convicted or have certainly been ruled to be someone that needs to be removed and haven't been. I know there's been a lot of talk about doing that. But at the same time, I think it's difficult to do that when you have sanctuary cities and sanctuary states, or you have mayors informing on when there's going to be an ICE raid. It's difficult to enforce at that point.
As far as the Bay Area goes, what percentage of H-1B workers employed are out of the Bay Area?
I've seen a statistic, and I published a statistic, that roughly 29% of tech workers in San Jose, which is the heart of Silicon Valley, Mountain View, that area, are citizens. The rest, well, are native born. The rest are foreign nationals. And that's 70% roughly of tech workers in the Bay Area, certainly in San Jose, that hail from someplace other than the United States.
Yeah, that's tremendous. So that's basically why you choose that area to put up the ads.
Yes, absolutely. I was on the phone with a reporter from the New York Times, and she tried to, you know, they always like to get you with the, you know, the gotcha. That was deliberate. I'm like, well, absolutely, it was deliberate.
Have you met up with any official organizations or meetups of tech workers?
No. What I've been doing since I've been out here, I got in here last Wednesday night, and what I've been doing is having individual meetings with tech workers, ones and twos, and what I'm finding, Rob, and this is deeply, deeply distressing, is they are afraid to stick their heads up and attempt to organize. Because one, they could get fired, and even worse than getting fired is getting blacklisted. And everyone I spoke to had mentioned that concern. And there's a third concern, and that is Antifa. For instance, let's just say they decided to do a meetup with the purpose of talking about H-1B visas and how to reform the H-1B visa. Antifa could show up and threaten them physically. And so that to me is deeply disturbing.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally disturbing. And these Antifa, they claim to be communist or anarchist, but they're basically just allowing themselves to be used as tools of corporations.
Absolutely. Because that's... it's really, when you look at these... And I've used this term many times over the last week. When you look at H-1B visa workers, they're really indentured servants. That visa is tied to the company. If they're fired, they go home. So they got a very There's a lot of quiescence in that workplace as a result. And for those that are citizens, it's equally stifling in that they could be fired, and like I said, they could be blacklisted. And another thing, and the Bureau of Labor and Statistics backs this up. I was talking to a tech worker yesterday, and he said he hasn't had a raise since 2006. Now, if you live in the Bay Area, you know what inflation has been like here, whether it's real estate, food, petrol, so they've been losing money, and wages are stagnant in not real nominal terms, not, you know, accounting for inflation. And you would think with all the demand for STEM workers that you would see this wage elasticity where companies would be offering bonuses to come on board. We're not seeing that. And that's simply supply and demand. They're able to satiate demand with a huge supply of foreign workers.
How much of an impact do the H-1B visas have on the Bay Area's housing shortage and suburban sprawl?
You know, I don't know, Rob. I couldn't tell you. I haven't looked at that. I was speaking with an attorney this morning who, when you look at the actual numbers, the H-1B visa is quite small to the other programs like H-2B. And also when you look at the number of immigrants, whether they come here legally and illegally here in the Bay Area. So, and as I mentioned, the population growth in the state of California is largely driven by immigrants. There is a huge outflow of native-born Californians going to states like Florida and Arizona and Oregon and Washington State. So I would imagine it's having an impact on, again, it's about the numbers, but I've not done any research as to what that would be.
And there's this all this talk about overpopulation, but U.S.-born citizens or people who were born in California are actually leaving California in droves.
Right. Without immigration, there would be a loss of, you'd see growth in the negative numbers. But again, it's the immigrants that have allowed it to stay, even with the downturn in immigration since 2008. Numbers are still, you know, like 1.3. I've seen 1.3, 1.9%, depending on the area, of growth. Now, people will say, you know, that's, you know, it's only a percent or so growth. Well, 70 years from now, that means there'll be twice as many Californians as there are today. So it is significant in the long run. And again, when you look at the per capita carbon footprint of an American versus someone coming from another country, and if you, like me, I don't know where you stand on this, Rob, but I believe in anthropogenic climate change. I believe that we are contributing greatly to the erosion of our ecosystems and making it a lot more difficult to sustain ourselves. I mean, just look at things like ocean acidification. I challenge anyone to go sit through a seminar on that and not feel like... feel pretty depressed at the end of it. So the numbers do matter. They matter from an environmental standpoint, and they matter from a labor standpoint.
And in some ways, it's more significant than a population increase among the native-born because, as you said earlier, their carbon footprint is increasing by moving here.
Absolutely. A fellow by the name of Murtaugh, a professor from Oregon State University, almost 10 years ago to this day, came out with a paper. He's a statistician and an environmentalist, looking at relative carbon footprints from various countries. And he tagged the U.S. at almost 20 metric tons a year per capita. And then we compare that to the United Kingdom of roughly 9, Russia at 11, Mexico at 3.4 metric tons. So you can, and India even lower than that. So you can understand pretty quickly that it makes a difference, and pollution doesn't know a political border.
So you touched on this earlier, but you said with this campaign, your long-term goal is to create a political organization or coalition of tech workers.
Yes. To me, that's the only way we will ultimately be successful. You know, we could hope that Congress will do the right thing, but the reality is they respond to campaign donations, and they respond to other pressures from well-financed companies that pressure them. What they need to do is see the movement back home. They need to hear from their citizens, and they need to feel that if I don't go along with this, it's going to be really difficult to maintain my seat.
Was there another organization that co-sponsored the ad?
No, just Progressives. Well, Progressives for Immigration Reform, this is our, we paid for the ads. We have a doing business as a DBA of ustechworkers.com. And I put a scan me code on the posters. So people can just go up with their cell phones and scan that and be taken to the ustechworkers.com site. And the idea is to put all this information there, to make it very specific to H-1B and tech workers. And that's the purpose of ustechworkers.com.
Eventually, would this be within Progressives or Immigration Progressives for Immigration Reform, or would you like to see a separate organization that's explicitly for tech workers?
I don't have any plans to split it off in the near future. Perhaps if it were providing other services or other, and I can't think of any right now, but let's just say it was diverting from the H-1B worker and maybe helping tech work, somehow a network was created where tech workers were able to plug into and, you know, do skills training and job placement, perhaps then it would be appropriate to cut it off. Split off and become its own organization.
How long do you plan to keep the ads up for?
The ads will run until April 1st.
And if the H-1B visa program were to be canceled, what kind of impact would it have on our economy and the Silicon Valley region?
Well, you'd find a lot. You'd find wages rising across the tech sector. So I see that as only favorable. Because what I'm not seeing is a lot of innovation coming from H-1B workers. That's kind of a myth. 26% of the positions recruited for require only an associate's degree. There are 4 skill levels in the H-1B program. And levels 1 and 2 make up just over 90% of all the applications. So levels 3 and 4, people with master's, very specialized skill sets, are only a small percent of all the visas.
So these workers, the H-1B workers, they primarily do just the kind of grunt work. They're not represented in the higher levels.
Right, right. In fact, in many ways, I sat with one of the board of trustees of a community college, and over lunch I pulled out the database and we looked in his city, and he saw over 400 levels 1 and 2 positions applied for. And these are positions that the foreigners recruited for these positions would be competing directly with their graduates, because the community colleges have woken up to the fact that they don't really want to be in the program or in the job of having someone go there for 2 years with the intent of them then going off to a four-year school. They want them to receive a set of skills that after 2 years, they can go immediately into the workforce and earn a good living wage from. And when you fill your workplace with people that are willing to do those jobs for less, that's a conflict. And that makes it difficult for them to really keep their promise of, you know, come here, pay for your credits, either with money you've saved or student loans, and at the end of it, it'll all work out great for you because you're going to have a good paying job. And it flies in the face of that.
We are getting close to the end of the show. Kevin, is there anything else you'd like to add about the H-1B issue or about your campaign?
I'll tell you something. There was a fellow, Josh Zeidner, who you had interviewed on your show. And after hearing Josh on your show, I reached out to Josh. And Josh is one of the brain trusts that, you know, as we were pulling this program together, gave advice and counsel on it. We also have folks involved like John Miano, Dave Huber, Sarah Blackwell, Jay Palmer, Donna Conroy. People have been in this fight for a long time. So that's kind of the mastermind group that's coming out of this. And my small staff, this ad, I got to tell you, Alex Hagen came up with conceptually what it was. Donna Conroy really helped with the messaging. And a brilliant, brilliant artist named Brooke Harker, who has a certificate in neurolinguistic programming, looked at it and provided her special touch to it that I think created an amazingly effective ad. Because that's what I hear time and time again. When I have talked to people in front of the ad about it, they're like, wow, this is like really effective. I know what it means. It doesn't take... I don't have to read a lot. I see it. It's making an impact. So we've been, with our motley little crew, I think we've been very successful in this.
Kevin, Lynn, it's been an excellent show. It's a really crucial issue. Thank you so much for being on.
Well, Rob, thank you. You're one of those rare voices out there, a real truth seeker. And again... Just going back to the example of Josh Zeidner, because of your show, we were able, I think, ultimately to connect, and we were able to get more expertise because you're out there where very few people are at this time. I think it'll become a crowded space, 10 years from now, but right now you're out there in the wilderness alone and doing great work, and thank you. I know, I can speak on behalf of all the tech workers I've spoken to, and because I've talked to a lot of people. I've received hundreds of emails since the start of this campaign, and you've certainly played a role in this.